Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I am Chris, and I'm joined by Ala. And Ala, I actually just found out the rankings came in. We are the number one LSAT Demon podcasters named Chris and Ala that teach RC classes at LSAT Demon, which is incredible.
Never saw that coming.
Welcome, everybody. This is the third episode in our RC series. Like I said, we're teachers here at LSAT Demon, which you can find at lsatdemon.com. We love RC, and we want you to fall in love with it, too. So today, we're going to answer some questions that have come up from classes that we found on the internet, scoured Reddit, other sources, to do RC Mythbusters. We are going to take some of the common things that we read and tell you why maybe they're not so good. So Ala, do you want to kick us off? You've got quite a doozy here to begin our podcast.
Yeah, we're going to be Mythbusters today. So the first up is reading LSAT-related content or reading the subjects that show up on the LSAT in order to get better at the LSAT, particularly RC, right? And I have heard this from students. I have heard this from other teachers, just generally in the LSAT space of, you know, if you go and read more about the topics that are covered on RC, you're going to get better at the actual passages. And this is actually one that I wanted to bring up in this episode, mainly because actually Beth, who's another teacher at the Demon, recorded an episode about how reading and reading outside the LSAT can actually help you get better and is helpful for you on your legal career in general. And I think that's true. And I believe that reading is good for you. However, trying to learn more about the exact content that comes up, you know, like learning more about science, learning more about history and art history, none of those things are the priority that you should have, nor are they going to help you actually get better at RC. Reading is good. But reading for, okay, if I learn more about this particular subject or this particular passage that I messed up, that means I'm going to do better on this passage. We want you to prioritize understanding. We want you to prioritize reading for comprehension. And we just really don't think that exploring more of those actual topics are where the money is at. What do you think, Chris?
I am all in. I couldn't agree with you more. My background was in history. That doesn't mean I'm any better at reading any of these passages that have anything to do with history. And honestly, me knowing more about a particular subject that I'm reading about has tended to hurt me more than helping me on any of these RC passages. It's not a skill that translates in the same way.
I completely agree with that. I used to struggle if I like knew about a particular topic, even if that wasn't like my undergraduate major or anything like that. I would be trying to bring in like these outside opinions and these inferences that I was making. And it would just sort of trip me up because I'm trying to make the passage something that it's not. And I don't think I found it any easier to do philosophy related passages. I'm a philosophy major from school. I didn't find it any easier to do philosophy passages. It was just about the same skills we talk about in classes and in our episodes, which is, can you read? Can you construct the story? Can you understand what they're talking to you about?
Yeah. And listeners might be thinking, well, it's reading and I need to get better at reading to be better at reading comprehension. And you're right. But there are so many reading comprehension passages, I promise you could whet your appetite just working through RC-related content. And the analogy you made me think about, Ala, is looking at another skill-based practice. So imagine cooking. Lots of things are involved in being a great cook. So one could similarly say, to be a good cook, you need a good sense of smell. So to get better at cooking, you should smell lots of stuff all the time. Spend effort learning what smells good, what doesn't smell good. That will translate to cooking. Just practice cooking. Follow the recipes, cook in the way you're supposed to, see results there. I could get any number of subscriptions to Scientific American or New York Times, read those articles till my eyes bleed. That still won't necessarily teach me the method it takes to be successful in answering questions and reading comprehension passage.
Yeah, exactly. We want you to do LSAT work. Everything else is likely going to be in the bucket of noise or at the In the best case scenario, it's just going to enrich your life or enrich your vocabulary, but it's not a replacement for actually studying for the test.
Yes, please read. Please read for pleasure. Get a library card. Support your local library. Just don't necessarily think that doing so will translate the next day on your RC passage score. And speaking of method here, we've got another myth here coming up next about writing or typing a summary for every single paragraph that you read in RC. This is a tip of advice that I see all over the internet, and I think it relies on some common tropes about how people remember better when they write things down and trying to tap into those things we've heard throughout our lives. But really, writing or typing a summary for each and every paragraph is an exercise that in itself is not going to provide you significant value. The understanding that it takes to create that summary or create that note you want to type is what we're seeking. But typing that down is not necessarily going to translate into immediate results for us.
And when you say that, Chris, I'm thinking about the comfort that might come from, and this might actually bleed into a couple of other myths that we want to bust today too, which is I think students are looking for comfort when they come and, try to work on RC passages, right? That's probably why you're listening to this episode, is because you want to get better at this test. You want to get better at RC. And whenever you go into a passage, you're feeling scared, nervous, anxious. And the idea of writing stuff down may seem comforting to you, but it's not doing what you think it's doing. It's not actually helping you understand. It may be playing that role of placating your fears, but not actually helping you learn or helping you understand what's in front of you.
That's an excellent point. And what I tell students in my classes is what's more helpful than just recapping verbatim where you've been is using that understanding to create a prediction about where the passage is going or needs to go to support an argument. We want to be an active participant in these passages, steering them as much as we can in how we're processing the content. We don't do that by summing what we've already done. We do that by orienting ourselves forward, seeing what the rest of this passage requires to complete its argument or give us the understanding it's trying to do.
Yeah, you're not trying to be the scribe in the courtroom. You're trying to be the lawyer in the courtroom. And lawyers understand stuff. They're not just summarizing things. They're trying to interact with what's in front of them.
I could not agree more. And so try to move yourself into the driver's seat of the RC car. See as much as you can how you can steer where things are going, and then see that translate into results as we process through these RC passages. Create an understanding where you could write a summary, but use that understanding to then predict.
Yeah, absolutely. What's up next, Chris? What's the next myth?
So we have myth number three, rereading the passage. And so there's a lot of myths that are kind of tied up into this one that bring a lot of kind of speed reading techniques, skim reading techniques that try to help you create understanding through sort of hacking the way that we read. And so the first one I want us to talk about here, Ala, is skimming first and then reading slow afterwards. What are your thoughts when you hear that?
Yikes. Skimming isn't reading. I would rather you just read slow to begin with. And I think, again, there's this idea that if you can sort of do some sort of preparation work, that you're going to have some kind of easier time as you go through the passage. I promise you that they're not trying to mess with you in such a way that you need like a battlefield plan before you go into the passage, right? It's just 15 to 17 sentences. They're presenting some kind of argument to you. They're trying to convince you of something, or they're trying to report on something that happened. They're just giving you some information. I understand it's got a high level of vocabulary. Sometimes it's convoluted. There's very long sentences. It's not fun. It doesn't, well, we think it's fun, but it can feel not fun when you start out, especially, and we understand that. But there isn't so much happening here that you need a battle plan, or you need something that's like a strategy like skimming first. I think it really just makes it seem like there's so much more happening than there actually is. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, and we read for understanding all the time in our life, whether it's like an IKEA instruction booklet. I just had to put furniture together yesterday, and I didn't skim all of the instructions really fast and then go back to step one and see if that helped me understand step one better. No, I took time in step one, making sure I could execute step one the way I could, which for me is always in question when it comes to furniture assembly. And then I
Chris, are there
progressed
words
from
on
there.
IKEA booklets? I don't think there's words on IKEA instruction manuals, are
It's
there?
very similar to worlds and logic games, visual representations, trying to make it
Oh, okay, I
really
get what you're
intelligible
saying.
for me. You know, I words, pictures, really one and the same when we look at
No,
these.
I get
What
what you're
are
saying. You're
words
talking
if
about the
not
actual process.
pictures?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, any word is just a picture we've assigned meaning to. We'll get into our philosophy episodes later once we've run out of content. Allah's going to drive the agenda in that case. But I want us to look at this in a common sense way. We've said in earlier episodes that you need to read as slowly as it takes for you to understand. So one of the other myths we kind of file under this larger subcategory, Allah, is reading hard passages twice. How do you react to that one?
That's one I've actually heard from students personally, like who have, come up and told me, like, when it's a really difficult passage, I let myself go through it twice. And I, again, we understand the impulse to do some of the myths that we're talking about, and we're not trying to criticize you or come at you for trying to follow any of these methods. We just want to educate you and want you to pause and ask yourself where the impulse to do these things is coming from, and if it's actually helping you understand. So reading hard passages twice might give you that sense of comfort. It might feel like, okay, I know exactly what this is saying. I know, like, what's coming next. And it might give you, and as Chris loves to say, it might give you the what of the passage, but not the why of the passage. It doesn't allow you to dig in. It doesn't allow you to understand the individual pieces and how they connect together. And I would far rather you read a passage twice as slow rather than read the passage twice. What do you think,
Yeah,
Chris?
I agree. No surprise. But there's different types of understanding on a passage. And so if I don't understand because the argument hasn't actually appeared yet, that's a healthy not understand because I'm specific in what I'm looking for. I have facts, premises that I don't know how to orient yet because nobody's told me what I should believe. And there's a type of understanding that comes from, I just read something, I actually could not tell you what the words on the page meant. I wouldn't be able to get a verbatim understanding. When we have that type of lack of understanding, we cannot progress forward. We have to stay in that misunderstanding until we clarify it. So if you're lacking understanding because the passage hasn't done what it needs to yet, or the argument is still building, healthy. Green light, proceed, because we're specific on what we're looking for. If the understanding is like, oh my God, I just blacked out and I don't know what paragraphs two and three were, we probably should have stopped somewhere before we got too deep into that misunderstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. I think students are the one of the umbrellas under which a lot of the advice that we give falls is, are you tuning your internal RC machine to pause as needed, to pause whenever you're not understanding, and to hit the brakes and go, okay, what just happened? Am I understanding? When you first start out, honestly, you could be three quarters of the way into the passage before you realize that you're not taking in what's happening, and that's okay. But over time, you'll be at the end of the first paragraph and go, whoa, I didn't understand anything they said, why they're talking to me, or any of the things that Chris and Ala tell me to do. So I'm going to pull back and then start over or go back a couple sentences to pick things up.
And you've got one up here coming next that I literally heard in two tutoring sessions this week, students asking
Oh,
me
yeah?
about, talk to us about prioritizing passages.
Yeah, so this is one that we actually have versions of this myth through our list today, which is looking at all of the passages in a section and then choosing the ones that you like. There's a couple angles in this that I think that students like to fixate on. The first is the topic aspect of it, which we've also talked about already in one of the myths, which is the idea that there's certain topics And there's certain ones that you don't know, and you're going to prioritize the ones that you know. Content related knowledge is not where you're being asked to build understanding. You're being asked to understand the relationships between the facts that they're presenting to you, between the arguments that they're presenting to you. In the vast majority of cases, when they bring up a new topic that the general public doesn't know about, right? Like, you will know like how many planets are in the solar system, but you may not know why, you know, Neptune is in that particular, you know, area of the solar system, or maybe some gravitational forces that are affecting Neptune. You don't know anything about that. And when you don't know, they will give you everything that you need in order to be able to piece the story together. As a result, the topic doesn't matter. I also hear this in terms of go through the passages to find the ones that seem difficult over the ones that seem easy, and go with the ones that you think are easy. I have myself fallen into this trap when I was in the sort of too perfect passage, you know, area of my studying. I would pick a passage and then I would pick, you know, see if I could skip over passage two and then go to passage three because three seemed easier. And I'm saying seemed because generally students, and I honestly think you and I, Chris, would probably be terrible at assessing whether a passage was going to be a level five or a level one passage. Because sometimes overall the passage seems straightforward, but the questions are very nuanced, or it starts out really simple and then it takes a lot of turns as it goes through. And we're just not the experts in assessing the difficulty. So you don't need to rely on your expertise of assessing the difficulty of RC passages in order to do well on this test. We just want you to go in order. And we want you to focus on understanding, not about picking topics and not about picking the difficulty of the passages.
I was going to make the same point. I think these passages and their difficulty and the questions they ask are balanced together. I've had passages in classes that I've taught where passages seem really straightforward. And then the questions are asking you to make kind of some really specific inferences based on the way the facts in that passage play together. Conversely, I've had some passages that are really, really dense and the logic takes a while to untangle and some of the opinions are nestled with really tiny words here and there. The questions are pretty straightforward once you do that work. Yeah. You're not going to know.
Yeah.
And so we have to enter these passages really as empty vessels. Let the passage fill you up with its info and its argument. So if you have specific feelings when you're entering a passage like, oh no, science passage, anxiety, or oh, yay, arts passage, fun. Those are feelings we should explore and see if they're adding value to our RC experience. The answer is going to be no. We need to enter these passages just like lawyers would, as empty, lifeless husks with no purpose but analyzing information. So keep that in mind as we're doing RC.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some joy in entering passages as an empty, lifeless husk, because it means that you can go with the flow. You can follow the stream of consciousness that the author is usually in when they write this. You can be curious. You can just embody whatever emotions you need to in order to understand. So up next, Chris, we've got highlighting. This is a question we get a lot.
And this is a thorny one, I think. There are a lot of opinions out there about highlighting, highlighting strategy, ways to highlight well, ways to highlight poorly. And my thoughts on this, I don't think are significantly different from yours, in that highlighting in itself, not necessarily bad. But highlighting can enable so many bad behaviors that I really hesitate to recommend most students use this as a general tool in the way they attack RC passages for a couple specific reasons. The first one, I relate to experience as a Midwesterner in winter. We have this concept called snow blindness, where it's early morning in the winter, fresh snow, everything is white. When you go inside, you're literally blind. You can't see anything. I think the same thing happens in RC passages where we highlight, because when we look at them again or as we progress, everything but the highlighted words becomes really, really invisible. Hard to see anything but what you've highlighted. And so if you didn't highlight something that was important, if you're not perfect, that's going to be something that's really hard for us to put much weight on as we're going back into the passage or creating meaning, looking at that comprehensively.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that, again, students use as a notion of comfort, which we understand, but is it really helping you?
I think not. And one of the other reasons why is that highlighting and students that I see with an over-reliance on highlighting are really focused on the what instead of the why. A lot of times the why in a passage isn't put in a discrete package that we can highlight in one spot and return to it. The author very rarely says, my argument is this, and this is why I'm writing the passage. Honestly, in some passages, they do. They're really clear about what they're arguing. And that's an example where if you want to highlight that, go for it. I would love it because that's going to anchor the whole passage underneath.
We want you to highlight the content in your brain, the kind of connections that you're making, right? That's the important stuff. The most important stuff isn't out on the page. It's the relationships that you're building, and it's the understanding you're building.
Yeah. And I do not find significant value in highlighting that an artist published a work in 1637 and 1641. If there's a question that for some reason calls me to look back at that, I'll remember where it's at. And their numbers on a page, I can find it. And that's the way I look at facts by and large in RC passages. The facts in themselves don't have huge value. But how the author used those facts to support a point or challenge another argument, that's where the value is. And sometimes things like that can't be highlighted.
Yeah, exactly. There is a note that I want to make here, though, which is that if you, you know, are neurodivergent or you are going through the LSAT with some neurodivergence in general, we can understand that things like highlighting could be something that's helping you. We're not here to set fire to your reality. We're not trying to ask you to throw everything out the window that we're talking about. But we want you to be critical about the stuff that we're mentioning and ask yourself and be brutally honest with yourself. Is it helping you or is it hurting you? And we try to be nuanced and empathetic about the advice that we give, but these are generally things that fall into the category of hurting you rather than helping you.
And if we did manage to set fire to your highlighter reality, I would just be wary of breathing in the fumes. I'm sure there's some carcinogens in those things. I'm not sure what. Which leads directly into our next point. I'm just kidding. Not really related. But the other myth that we're going to bust is about doing questions first to guide my way through the passage.
I think this one also falls into the bucket of some of the other myths that we've been talking about. Doing the questions first is another thing that students think, if I go and find out what the questions are going to ask me about, then I'll be able to keep track of the information as I go through the passage. That's not how it works. The questions are not your friend. The answer choices are not your friend. The passage, on the other hand, is your best friend that you keep canceling on, that you keep gaslighting sometimes, that you're just not very nice to. You're absolutely, you know, a horrible friend to the passage, and you think that your real friends are in the questions. And I'm here to tell you that that's not the answer. That's not where the money is at. The passage is a collection of all the right answers. There is no need to confuse yourself or get impacted or diverted by the questions or the answer choices. I'd far rather you be able to answer 1,000 questions about one passage rather than try to reverse engineer content from the questions into the passage and then back and forth. That is just, that's a inefficient way to spend your time. It's also just not setting yourself up for success.
Appreciate all of the understanding you just shared. You did not, however, need to call me out specifically in the way that I interact with my friends. I'm the number one introvert plan canceller. So producer Eric, we're going to need you to do some editing on that one. But I do want to add, we see this behavior often in another section of the test that students understand, oh, that's bad. I shouldn't do that. And that's logic games, where we know we have the most success at LSAT Demon if we put our work in on the front end, making worlds, eliminating rules, and then going into the questions. If you're doing an LG question by just creating the specific scenario you can think of that satisfies that question, so if X on 4, if red car on Tuesday, we're going to miss the whole gamut of all the other things that could be true or the things that could happen. The passage is the same. As soon as we see something that matches that question we're using to guide our read through, we're going to latch onto it. That thing we latch onto is likely not going to be representative of the entire passage and the author's full thoughts on an issue or where their argument requires them to go.
Yeah, exactly. What's up next, Chris?
Another RC hack that you see some students use, the Control F function. So for any pen and paper takers, pencil and paper takers, not applicable to you, you don't have this option. For everyone else, this is using the search function on your browser to look for specific words in the passage to then answer a question. And I want to assure you, LSAC is very good at writing examinations. They have done a couple, I think three or four at least, where they have written RC sections and all the questions in them. They write them in a way to trap people who use this tip. So if they ask you about a specific word or a concept, I promise you 9 times out of 10, the answer to that question is not going to be anywhere near that word in the passage. It's going to be some word that's similar. They're going to break that word into a phrase or a different related concept. They know you can control F. They know you can remember where words are. They're not going to put the answer right next to that word.
Yep. They're experts at pulling all the right words and meaning completely the wrong thing when you piece it all together. That's one of the things you should be paying attention in general, but it's something that students can fall into when they use the Control F function.
And if I just had one tip to add to everyone in their RC prep, like we keep harping on, it's why instead of what. Looking for a specific word is a what thought. The questions require why answers.
Yeah. And Control F can help you, right? Like if you are just trying to find your spot on a page, it can help you. But we don't want you to replace that with for actual understanding. And we don't want you to think that, oh, it's here in the passage. So that must be the answer, right? It's occasionally it can be a nice little tool to have, but I don't think I really used it on my official test all that much. And definitely wasn't, you know, anywhere nearly on the list of the actual things I was doing of building the story.
I love that. And this next one here is going to be a throwback to episode 2 in our series, where we kind of discussed all things speed. But Allah, I've heard you have to be done with the passage in 8 to 9 minutes. Your thoughts?
That's right. Otherwise, I'm going to call the cops on you and it's just going to be you're going to get in trouble if you don't finish in 8 to 9 minutes. But seriously, I hear this advice a lot and I hear the students lamenting about, you know, this passage took me 13 minutes to do and I need to get it to under 8 minutes. And it's because they're doing the math of 35 minutes divided by 4 and they're trying to get it into a range where they'll get through all 4 passages. I'm not going to lie. Some passages are 12, 13 minute passages. The difficult passages, especially even if you're a 170 scorer, are going to take you 12 minutes sometimes, right? It's a lot to get through and the questions may be nuanced. How difficult a passage is going to depend on, you know, your interest in what they're talking about. It's going to depend on the kind of vocabulary that may trip some people up and not other people up. We want you to understand what's happening. Take as long as you need to understand. We don't have a quota or a set time that you need to hit. We want you to hit the level of understanding. That's the goal. We want you to get to 95% understanding, not 8 to 9 minutes.
Yeah. And anytime we're having thoughts about speed, it's going to inhibit us growing in the way we need to with this exam. If you want more thoughts on speed and timing, check out our last episode if you hadn't. But what we need to practice is that skill of being able to understand. That means when we're studying, when we're learning, when we're taking practice sections or we're drilling, take as long as you need to build that understanding because that's how you get better.
Yeah, exactly. Looks like up next, we have the myth of memorizing the passage. How is memorizing the passage going to help students, Chris?
It's not, sadly. So this is indeed
that was
a
leading
myth.
question, I think.
Yeah, and thanks for setting that up for me. Happy to say no to that one. We've read a lot of stuff online about different techniques on how to memorize or speeds at which you should read or when you should read a passage again to induce your brain at maximum memorization ability. That would be great if the questions in RC were ones that caused us or required us to recite facts or things that the passage said literally. That's not the world we live in, unfortunately. We live in the world where the passage requires us to answer why questions. What would the author believe? What can we infer? Where would this author and that POV agree or disagree? Those things aren't written in the passage. If they were, these things would be a lot easier and I wouldn't have a job. So we can't focus on memorizing things from the passage. It does not provide value to us. We instead need to see why the things in the passage were said, not hold on to what the passage said literally.
Exactly. It's really about the understanding. It's really about, can you understand the significance, right? Because this is not a cumulative, you know, semester long class that you're taking where, you know, you read your notes like again, or you create an outline or you make flashcards. They're not really going to be useful for you past that, you know, 8 to 12 minutes, 15 minutes it might take you to get through a passage. So what is going to help you is the mind map, is the story. It's not about the individual pieces of information. Next up, we've got structure, we've got themes, we've got the myth of how every passage is going to look the exact same way. It's going to start with something, it's going to go to a certain place, and then it's going to end with something. Even in the sentence I just said, I'm so vague because I can't even get myself to say out loud that passages have a set structure. They absolutely do not. Some passages are going to, you know, do a view for every paragraph. Some passages are going to do one view for three quarters of the way through and then just do a 180 and then say, actually, I believe this whole other thing that I haven't mentioned yet, right? Some passages are not going to have views at all. They're just going to tell you what happened. Some of them are going to have chronological order, you know, historical events that took place and what the significance might be. Every passage is different from another passage. You should honestly take comfort in that, right? Because it means you don't have to prepare. You don't have to do anything outside. You just have to get on the boat and go down the river and make note of what's happening as you're going along. You don't need to stress yourself out and think, okay, in paragraph 3, there's going to be a particular plot point that I have to, you know, like me in horror movies where I'm just like sitting like this the whole time because I, like, as the music starts building, I know that something's going to happen. There aren't going to be, it's not going to be like that. It's just about what's in front of you, the sentence or the phrase in front of you. You don't have to worry about a set structure or themes in individual paragraphs. You just have to follow the story.
We cannot approach these things like they're the 5-paragraph essays we learned how to write in elementary school with intro, 3 bodies, and conclusion. They don't fit that structure. I taught a class 2 weeks ago. I remember the passage. It was about Sam Gilliam, the artist. And I asked the class at the end, okay, what do we know about this person's conclusion? The whole class was thrown off because the conclusion paragraph was, I think, number 3 or 4 with paragraphs afterwards. It didn't make sense organizationally, but that can happen. And it shows that these samples that they provide us are not tied to any set structure. We can't look at these as a structural element and find significant value that allows us to hack RC. And so with all the myths that we've kind of talked about today, the main theme we want to get across is there's no way to cheat understanding on RC. Understanding is king, and that's the skill we need to build as we work to go forward. So this is the list of myths that we looked at online, we could find in our research. We want to answer your questions. So as this series continues, if you have thoughts about RC, questions you're wondering, other tips, tricks that you want to see, what our take is on those, send that to us daily@lsatdemon.com. We'll be happy to include them on our next recording. Ala, thank you for joining me today. Thank all of you for listening. Where can they see you next, Ala? Where will you be?
Well, I'll be on the next episode of Daily Demon in this series. We're absolutely thrilled that students are finding this helpful. I want to hear about the myths that you're hearing, because we want all of you on board this train that we're taking, and we want to get you to a successful place and see that this is straightforward, it's not out to get you, and that it can be fun. And I'm just so happy that like students are liking this, and if there are things that we can improve, we're always looking to hear more about that.
Love it. Until next time.
Thanks, everyone.